Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
One of Chicago's coldest, most horrific unsolved crimes, and that is the Lane Bryant murders in Tinley Park. As many of you remember, we've been talking about this documentary for a while on my show, and has been being filmed in Chicago. Now it's ready to go. It's going to open in Chicago on February 13th. And we're here to talk to the documentary maker, Charlie Min. He's an award-winning filmmaker. He's produced over 45 documentaries about true crime, social issues, school shootings. And he was a producer for America's Most Wanted and has sold films to Investigation Discovery and Lionsgate. Welcome to the show, Charlie. Thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
And we're also here with Adam Katz. Adam is a former Chicago police detective with 25 years of service, 19 years as a detective, and 15 years working homicides. And he was also a hostage negotiator for 10 years, which I find fascinating. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you, Karen.
So, Charlie, let's. I know we've covered this topic before, but let's just first start out with you. Tell us, where can people see your documentary that's coming out very soon?
All the information is on the film's website, which is thetinley5.com. That's the number five. Again, thetinley5.com. It opens on Friday the 13th of all days, February 13th at AMC River East in downtown, and also AMC Crestwood. And then on the 18th and 19th, it will play at AMC New Lenox, which is near Joliet. And one of the victims is from Joliet, and that was Rhoda McFarland, the manager who made that heroic 911 call.
Okay. Let's just, for people who may not have tuned in when we talked about this before, or people who don't remember 18 years ago, can you remind our listeners what happened on that day at Lane Bryant in Tinley Park?
Saturday morning, 10 a.m., February the 2nd, 2008, a killer walks into a Lane Bryant of all places. And when he walked in, there were two employees and two customers at the establishment. Forced all four at gunpoint towards the back of the store, tied them all up with duct tape. Either he did it or maybe he had someone do it for him. When I say that someone else, I don't mean an accomplice necessarily, but maybe one of the employees. Two more people would walk in, two more customers, that is. He would come out to the front, ambush them, force them to the back, did the same thing to them, tied them up. So now we have six people being controlled by one person. With that said, one of the six fought back. Her name was Connie Woolfolk. And incredibly, last night at the AMC River East Theater, we ran into somebody who knew Connie. And she told me that, according to what she heard, Connie's struggle with the killer was long and violent. And wow. I said, wow, how do you know that? And I guess just from talking and digging. And in the film, we shot a reenactment, and it depicts that. This struggle went on for a little while. As a matter of fact, there's been a lot of reports that there was some evidence found under Connie's fingernails from perhaps scratching the perpetrator. And I know evidence has been talked about on this thing. We're not quite sure how much evidence was left behind. And you'll hear me say this a couple of times during this interview. The reason is because Tinley Park PD, they just don't talk. We don't know exactly how much evidence was left behind. You would think there might be some DNA on the fingernails, on the duct tape, maybe on some of the case shelling, the shellings. So then what happened was Rhoda makes a 911 call, and I'm surmising she made that call while the killer went out towards the front of the store, because this went on for 40 minutes.
That's a long time.
Very long time. It's sort of like Dog Day Afternoon Part 2 with Al Pacino. What went on for those 40 minutes? We know there was a fight. One of them was sexually assaulted.
And that's not really been published, really. I mean, I never knew that.
Once again, Tinley Park PD. We just don't know enough. The Brown's Chicken Massacre in Palatine took about half an hour. So
again, a long time.
Another long time, right. So when people ask, was somebody targeted that was killed? I don't think so, because if one of them was targeted, it would take 2 minutes, and that's that. The killer's just begging to get caught. He walks in there with no mask, hangs around for 40 minutes. who was he waiting for? Did the plan go off?
And again, we talked about this before, robbery. How could robbery be a motive when it's 10 o'clock in the morning? This is a non-cash business. The store was just opening, so there wouldn't have been any cash in the till or not much. So that doesn't seem like a viable motive.
Apparently, he took $200 during the 40 minutes, so that's $5 a minute. So no, I don't think this was a robbery whatsoever. So what happened was Roden makes the 911 call, and then he shoots all six in the back of the head. One of them was in the forehead. That was Roden McFarland, the manager. One of them survived. Her name is Marty. She would be 51 years old today from Kentucky. She was a registered, starting to be a nurse at the time. I can't locate her. I think I know who she is through digging. I did talk to her ex-husband through text. He said, I can't help you because I haven't talked to her in 20 years. She had just gotten a divorce before the massacre. She holds the whole key to this whole thing, Karen, because all the information we're going on is pretty much from her. She's the only one who survived.
How did she survive?
She shifted her head at the last second, and the bullet grazed her neck. Now, some people don't believe that account. Some people actually believe, and I want to be clear here, I'm not saying she's in on this, but some people think she was in on this in some way. How can everyone else get shot and killed just like that, and she suffers just a graze wound? And again, I want to be clear here. I'm not saying she was in on it. I'm just saying these are the possibilities.
And I've heard that rumor as well.
Right. But then what defends her is the 911 call. Whose male voice is that? So was she in on it with him? Again, just throwing it out there because I'm grasping at straws here because this case is unsolved. We've never had one arrest made in 18 years.
So the woman who survives obviously gave an account to the police, and anyone can go online and just Google Lane Bryant and go on the Tinley Five, go on the Tinley Park police website, and you will see a composite of him. It's pretty specific, and what he was wearing was pretty specific. He had a braid in his hair with beads that were kind of atypical maybe for that time. And so whoever, you know, this woman saw him and really got a good look at him. And of course, maybe after 40 minutes, and this was, you know, basically blazed in her brain. But she left town shortly thereafter, right?
No one's heard from her from the people that I've talked to that knew of her and actually knew her. One of the people interviewed in the film worked with her at the Lane Bryant. And she told me, yes, her name was Marty. Didn't recall her last name, but she lost touch with her. She said, very nice person. Not sure that she would be in on something like this. She wasn't even supposed to work that day, actually. So that, I believe, defends her as well.
Yes.
I would say there's a great chance she was not in on it. But again, we haven't heard from her. We don't know who she is.
Well, unless... and she could just be afraid for her life for good reason.
Yeah, and I cannot blame her for not coming forward. However, I do think she should speak up because if she really cares about all the other family members, we need her to be re-interviewed. Again, she doesn't have to give her name, but we need something. We need some spark to this case. We need a whole new set of eyes, and I've heard you say that before. We need a whole new set of eyes on this investigation.
The movie, the film, is coming out on February 13th. Where can people watch it, Charlie?
AMC Crestwood and AMC River East, which is in downtown. And then the following week, it will open up at AMC New Lenox.
Okay. And then will it stream eventually?
Yeah, eventually afterwards, yes. All my films eventually get on Amazon Prime.
Good, good. I'm also here with Adam Katz, who is a former Chicago police officer, and he spent 15 years working homicide. I want to ask you the question that I think everybody has, which is why would a police department not be giving us more information, allowing other people to get leads or to get information or even raising money to get genealogy testing and other DNA testing?
I think the simple answer to that, and I hate to break this down and make it simple, but there's an integrity to an investigation. There's evidence, there's things that you don't necessarily want to have out there. I believe that they should have come out. I think there should have been more information, some sort of a motive along the way. Anything that they would have had, anything that they could put out there, I think they could have done. I think what that does is eliminates a lot of these calls that are coming in, a lot of this other information that can be eliminated based on the facts that they have.
So let's just say, and again, this is speculation because you are not and we're not a police officer in Tinley Park, but let's say there's this cold case and now we have all this developed technology and genealogy, and maybe we can get something and find out who the person's cousin is and maybe work backward from there. And you know, we see these crimes solved after decades of time. What do you think that Tinley Park has the resources to be doing this kind of testing? Would they get resources from other places? How would that work?
I think they would have access to, you know, state labs, federal labs. I think they would have access to it. Would they necessarily have that? Probably not. I don't think so. But if there's DNA evidence out there, if there's something else that could be worked up, and you're right, based on the leaps and bounds that they've been able to look at this DNA and the evidence that they can gather from that, yeah, these things can be relooked at again, and certainly could be resubmitted.
Yeah, it's just, and then we're operating kind of in a void because we don't know if they're actually doing that and it's in process or they're not doing anything. I want to bring in one of the victim's family members who I'm not sure has ever been interviewed, or at least I've never heard it. Mike Hudek, thank you so much for joining us. Your sister Carrie was one of the victims in Lane Bryant, Mike. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And tell us about your sister. I read her obituary this morning and with tears in my eyes because she sounded like the greatest woman in the world.
Yeah, well, she was, right? You know, I think I've said it many times. She was a larger-than-life personality. You know, when Charlie first reached out to me, it's been a while since I've talked about it, but she, you know, when her wake happened, I knew, you know, my sister was a social worker at Homewood Foster High School, and she and I were very, very close and probably talked every day, if not every other day, certainly. And I knew she was good at what she did, but it really wasn't until her wake when parent after parent and kid after kid just came through and really said how much my sister had impacted and saved her lives in certain aspects. It was really overwhelming.
Yeah, I was impressed with everything about her. She was very well educated. She had a master's degree from Loyola. And so many people had posted really wonderful things about her. Tell us what it's, you know, this has to be heart-wrenching. It's been 18 years. People talk and use the word closure. We all know there's no such thing. But do you think that if there was somebody who was arrested and convicted, that that would bring some sense of closure or some sense of relief to you and your family?
So, yeah. So for me, I don't know. It's I had to forgive that situation and let it go because, you get to go to a real dark place, and it's hard. So, excuse me.
I'm sorry. Yes.
No, it's okay. So, and both my parents have since passed. So, if this individual was to ever get caught, I'm glad my parents aren't around to have to go and go through a trial and see and then relive all this again. Of course, I want him caught. I love him off the streets and protect other people from ever having to go through this again.
And there's a kind of a sweet story about you right after the tragedy happened, a baby being born. Can you tell us that story?
Well, yeah. I mean, my wife was pregnant at the time, and we were getting ready to have our daughter. And it was the day after that she ended up going into labor, and she died several hours later. You know, our daughter Carrie was born.
And so you named your child after your sister.
We did.
That's really just a nice story and a sad story at the same time. You know, Mike, over the years, have you spoken to the police? And do you know that the other victims' family members have tried to speak to the police or put some pressure on them? Any thoughts on that?
You know, so we spoke to him quite a bit in the beginning, and then we'll get a yearly update as time went on. And it's been a bit since I've talked to anybody. In fact, my wife talked to him a little bit more than I did, but I have not gotten an update, geez, I want to say in the last year, maybe two. And I don't know. For me, it's a little different. I don't know that I necessarily fault the police department. Somebody knows this person, right? He's somebody's nephew. He's somebody's grandson. He's related to somebody. So until really someone that's close to that situation comes forward and gives information, I'm not sure this person will ever be caught. So, you know, I have to have faith in the system. Otherwise, it's pretty sad if you don't, in that they've exhausted everything that they can to this point, and it's just a matter of someone turning them in.
And, you know, I'm not disparaging the police either. I actually, over the years, I've commented on this for various media outlets, and I did speak to the chief of police, who's now retired, and he was a very nice guy. He seemed like there was a lot of diligent work going on. We just don't know. And so when we don't hear things, we think the worst, I suppose, and it becomes frustrating, and even more so for somebody like you. But I'm going to talk to Adam for a minute. Adam Katz is here. He's a former Chicago police detective. What do you think will have to happen for this crime to be solved? And I think Mike is right. Somebody knows this. Somebody knows who put the beads in this guy's hair. Somebody knows, because if he was that sloppy, he probably said something, or if someone, you know, this wasn't a careful crime.
Right. I think Mike is absolutely right. I think what has to happen is either evidence that's been tested gets retested and they're able to confirm it that way through a CODIS system, or someone's going to come forward. Now, that someone could be a relative. That someone could be an ex-girlfriend. That someone could be his girlfriend now. That person could be someone that's going to jail for a long time for something and wants to make a deal. There are a lot of ways, a lot of things that could come up with this.
And, you know, with the Brown's Chicken, mm-hmm. which has a lot of parallels, as Charlie said, finally it was a girlfriend. It was a former girlfriend who one of the defendants basically confessed to, and she was afraid. She said she was afraid to come to the police, because if he was able to kill all these people in a fast food place, who else is he going to kill? Yeah, it just very, very surprising. I'm going to let you go, Mike. I really appreciate it. And is there any message for anyone out there for coming forward and trying to get this crime solved?
You know, first of all, I'd like to thank, you know, you for the time, and certainly Charlie for putting this documentary together, because, you know, these crimes are daily, as you see on the news all the time, and things get lost in the shuffle. So keeping this on the forefront is well appreciated, and our family and friends are constantly, you know, reaching out to us and checking on us. So without them, you know, we'd be in a real bad spot. So I just appreciate the love and support from my family and friends that we have, and people like you guys still trying to keep it, you know, out there.
I wish you the best, Mike. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We got just a few seconds here, but why don't we just recap, and then let's do another 15 minutes. And if anyone has a comment or question, 312-981-7200. Anyone has any thoughts about what they've heard about this crime and any idea for leads, please give us a call. And where can they leave leads?
They could contact the website, thetinley5.com. And again, that's the number 5, and we will get back to you. Unlike Tinley Park PD, you wouldn't believe how many people have hit up the website saying we gave leads to Tinley Park PD and they don't get back to me. So this is a very bad pattern, Karen, where there's such a lack of transparency and a lack of communication coming from them. It's not helping matters at all.
We're here with Charlie Min, who's a documentary maker, and the film is coming out, Who Killed These Women, coming out on Friday the 13th, February 13th, and we're here with Adam Katz, former Chicago police officer. Let's talk about the various leads or the various people who may have been looked at as possible suspects.
To me, there was only one viable lead that has been made known to the public, and that is Rhoda McFarland was a minister for 8 years, and she was associated with this church that apparently was going through some financial corruption. She disassociated herself from that church, and after her murder, it would be revealed that perhaps, somebody from the old church wanted to get back at Rhoda for possibly speaking out about the financial corruption. 8 Tinley Park police officers were sent to Austin, Texas, to look into this situation, and they didn't come up with anything. That morning, Rhoda spoke on the phone with somebody from Austin for about half an hour. So when I interviewed the brother about that, the brother said it might have been from a friend of hers who lived in Austin or somebody else.
Not necessarily associated.
Correct.
With the church.
We're not exactly sure who that phone call was that she was on.
But they seem to have paid attention to that, but kind of debunked it at some point.
Right, right. Yeah. It never went anywhere.
And there was another arrest you were talking to me about during the break, about a woman who...
Yeah, America's Most Wanted told me about this, and then we had people hit up the website. On February the 3rd, 2008, the day after the shootings, a criminal named Esther Reed was arrested at the Sleep Inn Motel in Tinley Park. Some people speculate, again, just speculate, that maybe she was the target and that the killer was after her. She went to jail for identity corruption, pretending to be another person who had died, and she got into colleges that way, Harvard, Columbia. Mm. The Esther Reed story is almost worth a documentary in itself if people want to research that. And again, I'm not saying that she was the target. I'm just saying these are the possibilities because she was arrested a day after in Tinley Park as she was on the run because police, they were checking all the out-of-state license plates in and around that area, and they found her car, and she was staying, again, at the Sleep Inn Motel in Tinley Park. So some people think that maybe she was the target. Again, just saying that's a possibility. That's all.
Adam, you've investigated homicides for years and years, and, you know, could this just be, I mean, everyone thinks of the whodunit book where everything is really complicated and well planned out and some really brilliant detective finally comes to the conclusion that this is what happened. It could just be this person who came in and did it was out of his mind on drugs, was crazy, was reckless, and just got lucky and got away. Is that a possibility in your view as a homicide detective?
Sure. Yeah, that's absolutely a possibility. You know, he could have strolled in there, wanted to get a couple $100s, and things went wrong when people came into the store, when customers came into the store, and he may not have known what to do.
Especially when Rhoda made the call.
Correct.
And here she is whispering heroically to the police to get them there. He finds out and doesn't know. Now he knows he's in trouble.
Correct.
So... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, kind of that's my theory on this one because the motive here is totally lacking. Charlie, as a documentary maker, I know you did a reenactment. How difficult is it to kind of make a reenactment without having this be really traumatizing for the people?
Very difficult. We had to hire actors, a crew, a location. We had to start from scratch. And these Chicago actors really came up big. It was a very difficult scene to be in because they're desperate. They're in agony. And, boy, these actors, they could give New York and L.A. actors a run for their money. There's a lot of talent here in Chicago.
Yes, there is. anyway, why don't you remind our listeners where they can leave a lead if they have one or where they can watch your documentary, and I can't wait to watch it myself.
Yeah, everything's on the website, thetinley5.com. That's the number 5. It will give you showtime information. You could email us there. And again, we will get back to you. We do believe in communicating to move things forward.
And should we be putting some pressure on the police? Should we be calling Tinley Park and emailing them and ask them what they're doing and try to put some pressure? Would that help?
That's a resounding yes. There should be a public outcry for this thing. When have you ever heard of an unsolved mass shooting, Karen? Like ever?
Well, and it's all women, not to say that men, you know, there's a difference, but we women should be outraged about this. Why aren't they pursuing it? Yeah, I agree. Let's all do that. Let's put it on your list to do. There's a lot to protest these days, and put that one on your list. Charlie, thank you, and good luck with your documentary. And I hope that by shedding light on this tragedy, we are going to get a solution. And I think this is a solvable crime.